Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters is a program that helps you see beyond the kind of limitations of our society because of some of the beautiful purveyors of change and evolution that we meet. And today is Alana Golden. Alana is a teacher of writing, of creativity, of screenwriting, and also of consciousness and healing and so on here in LA. But Alana, welcome to the show. I want to talk about how you are bridging for people here and people in Palestine. You're going to bridge the gap of information that a lot of us have about what's happening there in terms of people and creativity and evolution. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Veronica.
What on earth prompted you to be teaching, I guess for the listeners, I better say, for teaching creative writing, inspiring creative writing with students in Gaza or in Palestine?
Okay, so for my entire life, I really loved to stories. I like to hear people's stories, and I found that when people share their stories from the heart, there is a lot of healing that comes. And I have a degree in film and also a degree in spiritual psychology. So in 2000, I started a school for creative writing in Los Angeles. And right after 2001 and the 9/11 events, I realized that a lot of Islamophobia is going to be a part of our society. And I focused a lot of my teaching of creative writing around women from the Middle East and men from the Middle East, whether it was Saudi Arabia or Palestine or Lebanon. And I've always been a proponent of Palestinian rights. And in 2010, and so have always, you know, been against the war between Palestine. It's not really a war, but I saw the injustice because I lived in Israel for a number of years. I was born in Romania, but some of my young years, I grew up there. And in Israel, in Tel Aviv, as one of those privileged girls, even though my father or mother were not very nationalistic. My father was not in the army. Nobody I knew was in the army. But still, I was aware that I'm living in a country that occupies the land of another people. Mm-hmm. And all I needed to do was to look around and see Jaffa and see Jerusalem and see Nazareth and see all the Arab towns and villages that had been there for thousands of years and now are inhabited by the Jewish people who came there. I am basically in support of a one country that would be for both Jews and Palestinians who would live together with full equality, one vote, one man, one woman, one vote. I'm not against Israel. I'm not against Israelis. I'm just against, and I just would like to see, I don't even want to say against, but I would like to see this separation healed and bridged so Palestinians can also have security and peace and justice. So that was a little.
So tell us about what the Palestinians' life is like where they are. And that's a pretty interesting division, isn't it? Separation.
Well, it's a huge topic to talk about Palestine, Israel, Gaza, the West Bank, the war, and the creativity of the young people that we actually want to focus on, the young people that I began to meet over Facebook and then went and visited. I was in Gaza two times. But, okay, I will just say this. So there is historical Palestine that was taken and inhabited by the Turks, colonized by the Brits. And in 1948, the State of Israel was created, and it split that one Palestine country into three. There was Israel, there was what's called the West Bank, and then there was the small part of Gaza, which got Gaza is one is 7 miles. Excuse me, is Gaza is 32 miles by 6.8 miles
okay.
in 141 square miles. That's the Gaza Strip, and it is located, lodged, you can say, between Israel and Egypt. And then we have Israel, and then we have the West Bank, which includes Jerusalem, which, by the way, Jerusalem is not the capital of Israel, even though Israel would like to see it that way. And it has never been agreed by the United Nations that it even belongs to Israel. It is by the United Nations declaration at some point after 48 or in 48, that it should be an international city. But it is not. Israel rules it.
Hmm.
So the Palestinians have lived under occupation since 1948. In 1948, in order to create the State of Israel, 750,000 Palestinians were expelled from their homes, and they became what's known as the refugees. Some of those refugees, a large number, I think maybe, I'm not sure the numbers, but a large number escaped to Gaza, which is literally an hour south of Tel Aviv, the main city where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them escaped to Lebanon, and some of them escaped to the West Bank, and some of them to Jordan. Up at, between 48 and 67, Egypt ruled Gaza, and Jordan ruled the West Bank, and Israel ruled Israel. But in 1967, there was that famous war that was called the Six-Day War, the victory of Israel, a big cornucopia of...
Fury?
No, of victory. Excuse me, big cornucopia of victory. We got Jerusalem. We won Jerusalem. Won. Anyhow, since then, Israel has been holding those territories against the United Nations, against the United Nations decisions, or however you call them. So let me focus on Gaza.
Yes, because I want us to get to the creative
focus,
spark in there, too.
Let me focus on Gaza. I also want to tell everyone who is listening to this, all you need to do to please educate yourselves more about Gaza and Israel and the West Bank, because what the media is telling us all are lies. And my intention is to dispel some of those lies and some of those myths and some of those prejudice and stereotypes.
Good.
So, in 2010, so basically, if you go online and you Google the West Palestine 101, you will find a lot about it. Palestine Israel 101, the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, you will find a lot of information. In fact, too much. So I've always been in support of Palestinian rights and went to demonstrations. And
did you do that when you were in Tel Aviv?
Yes, I did that in Tel Aviv in 1972 against the war, against the occupation. I also had...
Was that a large movement?
It was back then larger than today. And on the whole, like we see in this country and in the entire world where there is a shift to the right wing.
Mm-hmm.
There is also that shift in Israel. When I was a teenager, there was much more left wing activity, much more openness and desire for change.
Okay. Desire for peace, if I remember correctly.
Say again?
A desire for peace.
A desire for peace, a desire for yes, a desire for peace, for justice. Yes. Yes. So in 72, I was 17, and I had, like all citizens of Israel, had to go to the Israeli army. And I had a good fortune. I met a guy who I fell in love with, And we decided to create a group that will serve in the army but refuse to serve in the occupied territories. And in that way, we kind of made more of a big deal of the territories than if we didn't go at all. However, in the I refused to shoot a weapon. I also refused to pledge allegiance. We all refused to pledge allegiance to the state. And I actually got released after about 3 months as a conscientious objector.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah.
Great.
I mean, there really wasn't such a clause back then. So It just says that I'm unfit for service.
Okay.
Which I am. But the way I did it, I said, you know, I don't like what I see. You say that there are no Palestinians in that the Palestinian people don't exist. That's what Golda Meir said in 1969. But I, in 1967, right after the war, was in a Swiss summer school in Switzerland and met Palestinians, refugees who came from wealthy families who could send them to a summer camp, and met Arabs. And they loved me, and I loved them. And we were 12 and 13 and 14, and I understood that war is not between people. It's between governments and between whatever it is that Wizard of Oz that is behind those governments.
Right, right.
So jumping back to 2010, I finally got on Facebook because someone finally convinced me. And it says on my Facebook page that I have a school for creative writing. And one girl in Gaza by the name of Rana wrote me that she wants to be a journalist and a writer. And will I work with her in creative writing? So I began to work with her. And then one became two, became four, became five, became 20. And we would do creative writing using, so they were in Gaza and I was here.
Using Skype, that's wonderful.
By Skype, by phone, by emails. But here is what I began to learn. Even I, who had been educated to a greater degree than most, did not know so many things about Gaza. I still saw that it was a barefoot refugee, uneducated, you know, connected to suicide bombing. It is not. It is. There are more than 10 universities in Gaza. Every single person I met, first online and then when I went to visit in 2013 and 14, had a degree, at least a BA. Many of them had an MA and many of them had PhDs.
Did they all come from the moneyed end of world or did they do it themselves or how did they manage it?
I think the schools are not that expensive. Okay. And I imagine that there are scholarships and education is so important that I trust that families will do everything to have their children sent to school.
Wonderful.
So now Gaza is made up today, these days, Gaza is made up of about 25% the indigenous people of Gaza who have been there for hundreds and thousands of years. And 75% are refugees, those refugees that I mentioned earlier who had been expelled from Israel on boats and on donkeys and in little cars and by foot, and they ran to Gaza. So we're talking, this was 1948, so it's 52, it's 68 years. Many of those, so today, Gaza has one big city called Gaza City, and about 8 or 9 refugee camps. But even within in that small 131 or 151 mile square that I mentioned, 141 square miles. So in Gaza City, you have high risers. You have beautiful hotels with that look over the beautiful Mediterranean Sea, that serve the most amazing food and fish.
Who stays in those hotels? People come traveling from all over the world?
No, we wish, because Gaza is an open-air prison. Nobody can get, very few Palestinians can get out of Gaza. Only those who have some connections or who are businessmen or women, or doctors, very few can get out of Gaza. And very few can get into Gaza. You cannot be a tourist. You have to be invited by an NGO. NGO could be a UN NGO. NGO can be another type of non-governmental organization, which is how media people can go in. I'm not sure to what extent, but unfortunately, it is during the wars, and Gaza has had three major wars since 2008, not to mention all the other attacks, like there was an attack last night in which five people were injured.
Oh my goodness.
But major wars in 2008, 2012, and 2014 that killed. In 2008, 1,500 were killed. In 2012, a smaller number, around 130, but, even one killed is a lot. And unfortunately, in 2014, just two summers ago, 2,191 were killed, and of them, mostly civilians, always, and of them, 550 children under the age of 10.
Oh my gosh. So when I first talked with you about doing this interview, you said it was remarkable that the people loved their studies and wanted their degrees and so on, and sometimes had to basically go around wars, put a procrastination on while the wars happen, and then return. That there's kind of a zest embedded in that when people around them are dying and they're young, right?
I can only imagine, and maybe I cannot imagine. I don't know how. So just to finish the thing about the hotels, that during the war, there is a lot of media people who come.
Okay.
So, example, this young woman, Rana, who I met in 2010, and she was finishing first year at university. And she told me, and I asked her to write a number of things, and among the things that she wrote was how, so in 2009, January 2009, when that Operation Cast Lead, it was called, was raging, she was finishing 12th grade, and she had to get a particular number of points in order to enter the good university. And despite the fact that her being locked in a room, crying, hearing bombs all the time, her father is a surgeon and they live near the main hospital, and she was surrounded ambulances, and still she continued to work, and despite the war and despite the pain and despite the fear and the frustration, she got a very high level in her exams.
Wow, that's remarkable.
As a senior, and then she finished, a BA at the university in Gaza, and then she went for a year and did a master's degree in England, and now she's doing her PhD at Columbia University.
Wonderful.
And she's one if you had 6 hours, I could tell you about many more such cases. And this is true for people who come from wealthy homes. So basically, they're all within the indigenous people in Gaza who own land and buildings.
And so they're called the wealthy people, right?
And they are wealthy. Mm-hmm. And I have driven in Mercedeses, and I have driven in BMWs. I've been in gorgeous apartments with beautiful furniture. I've been to a wedding in a very, very high-style hotel. But let me tell you this. And there are also wealthy people who came from the camps. because you don't have to be wealthy to become something in life. All those people from the refugee camps, not all, but many of the people in the refugee camps, they learned a profession, they opened a shop, they became a psychologist, they became a teacher, they began to make money. Their situation in their community improved. And now I've been to incredibly beautiful villas in the refugee camp. Wow. And around, when you think refugee camp, people think, oh, only those little narrow streets. Yes, they exist. Or there are no tents. It's not like a tent refugee.
Mm-hmm.
So in the center, basically in 1948, there were tents. And then people began, they saw, all right, we're not going to be taken back to our place in Palestine, in Jaffa or near the what's called Israel now.
Mm-hmm.
We will stay here. So they began to make a little money, and they built a hut. And then the hut became something better.
So they have a real estate market, huh?
Yes, I guess so. Like everybody, like everywhere else.
Right. Well, that's remarkable. I wouldn't have expected that. No.
Yeah, there are 10 universities. There are.
In that little space.
That little space, there are more than 10 universities.
Remarkable.
Yes, universities and high. Now, creativity-wise, almost everyone has a camera, and somehow almost everyone they are so the word resilience doesn't even begin to describe them. Immediately there is a war. A friend of mine, so basically after in 2010, let me also say that for my entire life I every Palestinian I met, I said, I am sorry and I apologize that your people had to lose their land and their rights so that people like my family would have a place to come to from Romania.
Hmm.
I also said that to all the people that I worked with on Skype, all my students. They loved me. If they had problems with a relationship or with a parent, who do they come to? They would come to me. And then I was introduced to Dr. Eyad Sarraj. Dr. Eyad Sarraj was a refugee. He was a refugee from Be'er Sheba, which is a big state in the south of Israel. And so he was a refugee in a camp. And he became a psychiatrist, the first psychiatrist in Gaza. He studied abroad. He studied in London, I believe. Yeah. Or the United States, what it doesn't matter. And early on, at least 25 years ago, he created something called Gaza Community Mental Health, which is an NGO that provides services for free for people in Gaza who cannot afford it, psychological treatment, psychological help. So there are lots of I was introduced to Dr. Eyad Sarraj, and he invited me to come to Gaza and teach creative writing in 2013. And I went there for a month.
Is that to a university?
No, it was no. But I did no. I taught very informally. I'm a very informal kind of person. I'm not a university professor. Neither do I. I taught. I taught at Gaza Community Mental Health. I also taught people from different NGOs. I taught people from the UN, social workers, psychologists, and also all my buddies, all my friends who had already been working with me on Skype writing. And also we had a wonderful workshop in meditation, and many of them throughout the years expressed such an interest in meditation and in the mind, and how can we quiet our mind? How can we not give into fear? How can we deal with depression? How can we deal with with hopelessness? So I have the incredible privilege, and it is my privilege, to be working with these young people. Most of them are students or just graduated from students from university, or a little, maybe they're a touch younger. It's a great privilege to work with them. People think that I'm helping them. They're helping me.
Wow. It's remarkable. But also in the links that you sent me from your website and so on, there are a number of stories written by your students. And I found them very poignant, very touching. And maybe you want to give your the way that people can read those, because they're just really, really vignettes into the evolution required or the awakening required.
And photographs. There are also incredible photographs, both by, there's a whole photography page that also shows some photography is by professional photographers. There is a film in the, so you want me to give my website?
I think people should really enjoy that or learn it, yeah.
It's www.gaza, G-A-Z-A, narratives, N-A-R-R-A, however you spell narratives.
T-I-V-E-S.
Yes, .com.
Easy.
Right. Yeah, gazanarratives.com. There is photography and there are stories, and it's an ongoing website. We will hopefully upload more stories and more photographs.
I found it really engaged me in their essential courage and insight into life. It's wonderful. So, yes, carry on. This is very interesting.
I kind of go in circles, but I am not a university lecturer, and hopefully I weave this story in a way that people can understand. So I was so impressed by these young people and their creativity and a number of other events that took place that I wrote a screenplay to be shot in Gaza that I wanted to direct with a Gaza cast and crew. And I spoke with a producer in Gaza. Again, he also knew that I grew up in Israel. So when
they have full media there, full television, do they?
I think they do have television. They all have satellites. Mm. Let me just make a add something here. There is also an immense poverty in Gaza. Electricity, whether one is rich or poor, whether one lives in the city or in the refugee camp, comes on between 4 and 6 or 8 hours a day for years.
Oh my.
Those poor people who don't have a generator, which still requires some gasoline, and sometimes they light, the only thing they can do is light candles. There were many unfortunate deaths of children from fires that emanated from people trying to get some light at night from candles. Hmm. The water in Gaza is undrinkable and has been undrinkable for years. A friend of mine who goes to Gaza with doctors, they go to with doctors and they provide love, support, and of course, medical training and conference, and they support the doctors there. They arrive in Gaza. She asked one of our friends, when did you last drink water from a tap? And he said, never. This guy is 44 years old.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Where do they get their water then? They have to buy it, I suppose.
They have to buy the water.
And if you're poor, do you get any water?
Say again?
If the people who have tremendous poverty, do they find it difficult to get water at all?
What they do have, they have from UNRWA, from the UN. UNRWA is United Nations Relief Agency and workers. Hmm. And that's the part of the United Nations that deals with refugees in the Middle East, especially the refugees that were created by the State of Israel, I believe. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So It does. So whether they have a BMW and the girls have beautiful clothes, because you actually can get beautiful clothes, and all my girlfriends there are more fashionable than I had ever been. Incredible. They love jewelry. They love beauty. They love makeup. They wear very high heels. Never in my life have I wore such high heels. Tight jeans. And beautiful hijabs. Not every girl, it is not mandatory. Girls and women do not have, young women and do not have to wear the hijab, but most of them wear the hijab because it's the custom. But many young women in Gaza do not wear the hijab, just to get that out of the way. So back to my point, whether they're rich or poor, when a bomb from Israel hits, nobody is spared. So basically, what I'm saying is that, so now in the last 10 years, there is a siege. Gaza is besieged. So basically, in 2005, Israel took, between 1967 and 2005, Gaza, there were 8,000 settlers, 8,000 Israeli Jewish settlers in the state of Gaza.
Why were they there?
Because Israel is a colonized. Israel is a colonizer.
Oh, why did so they want to take over? Is that it?
Yes, because Israel is colonizing this whole area. And basically what they would really, it is colonizing it in factum, and it's also colonizing it ideologically, even though many people who are Jewish Israelis do not want to completely colonize that land. It's not that different from what happened when the white and men and women came to America or to Australia or to New Zealand. They took over. They annihilated cultures and the native indigenous population.
Is that the relentless drive that's gone on since the beginning of time, eh?
I think since colonialism started, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know. I guess so.
It doesn't matter. I just always refer to the Bhagavad Gita, which was all about that. And that was, 8,000 years ago?
But that was a war.
Right.
Those were wars between sovereign nations or families that both had power, arms. Israel-Palestine is not a conflict over land. Neither it is a war. It is a colonization.
Yes, I understand the difference. Mm-hmm.
It's one people has all the land and all the rules and all the money and all the media backing and all the and all the arms, and the Palestinians have nothing.
Well, let's jump back for a minute. I asked you about the television or media presentation. Is there media bought by Israel? You know what I'm saying? Is there some uniquely independent media for the Palestinians?
I'm not clear exactly what you're asking.
Oh, I'm just wondering, like, here our media is very bought, you know that. I mean, it's kind of paid for and it's directed by huge money. I wondered if over there the Palestinians were able to develop media which could present their own truth without Israel taking over or the big money interests taking over.
I'm not sure. Most of what, in the West Bank, and I have not been in the West Bank for many years, they do have television of their own, and they have a lot of TV series, Palestinian TV series, I believe. I think. In Gaza, they all watch America, you know, they were more they were more up to date with American TV shows than I was.
Oh heavens.
I don't watch
because of the
TV.
Satellites, right?
Yeah, they have satellites, they have the internet, they watch feature films and they watch TV, Law and Order. But so up until 2005 there were three or four settlements of Jews who lived in Gaza. And in 2005, Israel disengaged from Gaza. They took out the settlers, but they are continuing to control Gaza from the air, from the sea, and from the land. So Gaza is surrounded by, on three parts, north, east, and south, by a wall, 27 feet high, if I'm not mistaken. It's very, very tall. I'm sorry, I'm not sure. Would 27 feet be very tall?
Yes indeed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Some of it is barbed wire, and some of it is actually a wall.
Oh, my God.
Concrete wall that has armed towers, militarized towers that could shoot people.
Wow.
Then it has the sea. So the fishermen, there was an airport in Gaza that was created in the 90s, and then it was destroyed by Israel in what's called the Second Intifada in 2000. So there's no airport. The sea, even though there is a beautiful potential harbor there, there is no harbor. Israel will not allow the Palestinians to build a harbor. The fishermen, so basically there is no import, no export. And there are two gates. One gate is with Egypt, and the other gate is with Israel. So you ask, okay, so basically Gaza doesn't have export and import. Gazans can create a lot of things on their own, from fruit and vegetables and small industry.
So they grow their own vegetables and fruit. Hey?
But not enough, and the land is not good enough for that, for 1.8 million people. So they are forced to buy produce from Israel, whether it is shampoo for their hair, or tampons, mm-hmm. or milk and yogurt. So not only that Israel is occupying them, but they're also forced to buy. So Israel makes business on these poor Palestinians.
So one more question, though. Is there any business with Egypt? You said Egypt's on the other side, right?
I'm not sure. The situation is very, very bad also with Egypt. At the moment, the border with Egypt is completely closed.
Oh, my.
For many years, there were tunnels in every occupied land. In everywhere where people are oppressed, there is what's called the black market. So for many years, there were tunnels from Gaza through to Egypt, and cars and all kind of merchandise went through. But that also those tunnels are completely demolished. Some of them were demolished by the Egyptians, some of them were demolished by the Israelis.
Are the Egyptians fighting for the Gaza Strip?
No, they're not. They hate Gaza. Hmm. I mean, okay, here is what happens. At the moment, Israel is more collaborating. Egypt is more collaborating with Gaza in not allowing At the moment, Egypt is collaborating with Israel to not allow Palestinians out of Gaza under the pretext that they're terrorists and they work with Gaza, with ISIS. And it would be as if all of us Americans will be associated with the Ku Klux Klan or with James McVeigh.
Oh, I see.
It's
yes.
Collective mm-hmm. punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Collective punishment by Israel and collective punishment by Egypt. So after those revolutions in Egypt in 2011, there was a president, President Morsi, that was elected in Egypt, and he was friendly to Hamas, which ruled Gaza, and he was also part of the Muslim Brotherhood. I do not support Hamas or the Muslim Brotherhood, but they were both elected democratically.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. However, in 2013, so in 2011 were those revolutions in the Arab Spring that in Egypt. In 2012, Morsi was elected. He was friendly to Gaza, and the border with Egypt between Egypt and Gaza was open. A border that to that moment was controlled by Israel. You see,
mm-hmm.
And for a short time, for under a year, the border was open. Open, when I say border open, you still have to stand in line. You still have to have permits. Don't for a moment think that it's like going from New Jersey to New York.
Right.
It's still going into an open air prison, but it was possible for many former Gazans to go into Gaza to visit their families. Still, people had to be invited by NGOs. And I was invited in 2013. I went to Gaza. I was there for a month. I worked on a film that I hope to still be making and taught creative writing. Even though everyone who invited me knew that I grew up in Israel, I was asked not to say that I grew up in Israel. And this, I imagine, is and was for my safety and for their safety. Because who knows, if I grew up in Israel and I speak Hebrew, those Gazans, the only way they saw Israelis are as soldiers.
Hmm.
That bombed them from the air and from the sea and from tanks on land. So, luckily, I'm born in Romania, and I was able to enter through Egypt. And people asked me what's my accent, and I said that I'm from Romania. I think that some people maybe guessed, but nobody said anything. The love, what's the word when people, hospitality, the lunches, the dinners, the gifts that I received, I had never ever experienced such appreciation for what? Because I came to visit them.
Mm. Didn't you also say that you found Palestinians or the Gaza people absolutely a loving bunch anyway,
yeah.
A loving culture?
Yeah, yeah. It is a conservative traditional society. Even with all, most people are, most, not all, but many people pray five times a day. I love the muezzin, you know, the call to prayer five
yes.
times a day. You hear it at dawn, you hear it at noon, you hear it in the evening. For me, I've been meditating for 32 years, those moments, those 5 minutes that it takes for the muezzin to chant was such a moment of peacefulness. So there are no movie theaters because Hamas forbade, closed the movie theaters. They used to have movie theaters, but Hamas closed it. So there is no official movie theaters, and there is no official theater. However, there are small informal productions, and there are, like, there is a French institute and an Italian institute, and they will show films, okay? So one of the things that people can do, they can get together as family and as friends. So on the beach, for example, and the beach is all over Gaza, beautiful Mediterranean beach.
Beautiful, huh?
Yeah. there are cafes, and some of the cafes have large spreads of grass. And people come and bring their mothers and children and cousins and picnicking there. Or they buy food at a restaurant and bring it there. And one time I said to a woman, you know, the woman, she was smoking a shisha. You know what a shisha? Nargile. It's that
bubble
it's that
pipe.
Mm-hmm. I said, it is so beautiful to see how these families, how all of you are together on the beach, and everyone after 5 o'clock after work, everyone comes on the beach, and this was summer, until night, until 10, 11, even midnight, and there is music. And she looked at me and she said, where else can we go? And what else can we do?
Wow, at least they have the unity of family too. Seems like there's a strength and a bonding in the middle of all this trauma, huh?
And that's an interesting thing. There have been, so I've been, this Gaza Community Mental Health, I've been working with them and I've been reading some materials that they published. The level of trauma that the children in Gaza have experienced is huge. Nevertheless, a lot of it has been healed and dealt with. How? Through the support of the family.
Wow. Family love. We've lost that in America, have we not?
Oh, completely. Mm-hmm. Completely. I mean, there is an appreciation. People touch. You know what I'm saying? Men don't touch women and women don't touch men. But men get together and they hug each other, and women get together and they hug each other. And I think I shared with you. Are we out of time or is still okay?
Oh, no. We have another 7 minutes.
Okay. But I want to say one thing that is important, and then something about the university.
Yes, please.
The fishing industry could be booming, and they could market their industry and their fish and shrimp and whatever else you find in the sea all over the Middle East. But Israel only let them fish within a 3 to maybe now 6 nautical miles. And after that line, there are boats, Israeli boats, not Israeli boats, Israeli military navy.
My gosh.
If God forbid, a fisherman will cross that line by a foot, his boat would be shot at, he might be shot at, he might be wounded, his boat will be confiscated. And those are facts. By the way, everything that I say here are facts that could be
verified,
and you can see pictures. Go hotels in Gaza and you'll see the hotels. Go restaurants in Gaza, you'll see the restaurants. Go refugee camp in Gaza.
So I just want to go back for a second. You were talking about how children grow up with an incredible stress level. I mean, just knowing every day that something could be blown out of the water is a pretty big stress level, isn't it?
It is, and maybe, I don't know, I said it a number of times, some people who are from more, you know, like from the esoteric level say that. I think that they're what's called evolved beings. I think that those kids and those people who are born there somehow have an inbuilt, they're traumatized and they suffer depression and life is tough and hard. But there is a saying, smile, you're in Gaza.
Oh, wonderful. Is that very encouraging? Wow.
It's on my website. There is a joy of life. They have something to live for. They want their rights back. They will never leave Palestine. Israel is making their heart so difficult, and I'm saying this mildly now, that they would want to leave, and many of them leave. And they're dying to leave because it's so hard. You know, they can't go out, they can't can go in. Nobody can go visit them. You can't even send a letter to someone in Gaza or a book.
But Ilana, you have one story on your website by a girl who was wanting to get out, wanting to get out, wanting to get out, and her heart turned and she knew she wanted to stay there for her life.
There are two stories. There are also, yeah, do you mean the girl who was, there? Yeah, there is a story of a girl who goes on a boat, on a trip, on a boat somewhere else. It's kind of a poetic one, the one where she said, but it doesn't smell.
It smells like
it doesn't smell like Gaza.
Right, right. But those stories are so full of that kind of thing. Anyway, back to you. We have a few more minutes.
Okay. So I said the thing about the fish that I wanted to say. So I'm talking about touching and about dispelling. So, okay, another piece of information. So those 75% of people who live in Gaza who are under the refugee status, they receive education, medical, and some amount of food. I cannot tell you how much. Rice, flour, from the UN. And they also have desalination stations. There are big cans in the refugee camp. There are cans that has desalinated clean water.
And are these for the poor people as well?
Yes.
The poorer segment?
Yes, right? That's for the poor people. That's free.
Okay, I feel
believe
better.
It's free. But right now, I just heard it yesterday, that even the desalination, because Israel keep bombing, like right last night. So there is something called Salafists, and they have a viewpoint similar to ISIS. And there are a few of them in Gaza. I mean, God knows we have them in the United States. So why won't they also be in Gaza? So there are a few of them in Gaza. And they shot a few rockets onto Israel. Thank God nobody was killed. And Hamas, that rules Gaza and was democratically elected there, communicated to Israel that they are going to arrest that group. Nevertheless, Israel bombed Gaza 30 times last night
tanks
and from the air with airplanes.
Oh.
Five people are wounded, but the point is that they said that they were targeting Hamas infrastructure, but some eyewitness said that they actually shot a water desalination construction.
Oh my.
Yeah. So, okay, so the final little story. There was at the Islamic University of Gaza, which is a beautiful and very large university. I was invited to participate at a conference in support of Palestinian rights, in support of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli prisons. Okay, there are, I think they were about 10,000, but now maybe there are 7,000, and many of them are there without. You know, they're in detention without trial, very, very bad. So I was at the university and I was assigned to sit next to a girl on my right who would be my translator. And she was very nice. Her name is Ala. And to my left was a woman who was nicely dressed and she was actually dressed head to toe in a coat and she had a white niqab. Niqab is that thing that covers the head, the not only the neck and shoulders, but all the way the nose, and all you see are the eyes.
Right. Okay. I've seen those. Mm-hmm.
So she was sitting next to me, and all of a sudden I see that she takes my left arm, and she begins to hug me, and she begins to tell me that she wants to tell me her story, and she's a mother of five children. She lives in a, and she speaks English, and she lives in a refugee camp. She has five children. She's in her 30s. and she's doing her MA in English. And she has a car, she drives the car every day. And I not only that I was moved that A, she studied at university with five children, wearing a niqab, but that she completely, you know, touched me and hugged me as if I was her sister.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
And that's what you get there from children, from mothers, from grandmothers. I mean, Gaza stories, the world must understand that.
Will you go back, Alana?
I hope so. Mm-hmm. I hope so.
You made me want to go. This is Veronica Entwistle saying you've been listening to Alana Golden on Palestine, or really the Gaza Strip, I think is what we're talking about, and the amazing brightness of spirit that emanates from that oppressed area. And Alana, your experiences are only, this is only the beginning. We need to talk to you again if you're willing.
With pleasure. I'd be delighted. I want the world to fall in love with these young people like I fell in love with them, and with their stories and with their spirit. I want us all to be inspired by them.
So give your websites one more time so people will check it, because I was very inspired so far, and I will go back through and be careful with the photographs. I want to see more of that.
Yeah. www.gaza, G-A-Z-A, narratives, narratives.com. Right?
Yes, that's wonderful. And one more thing, is that the website that has the promo for your video, your visual, your movie?
No. Do you want? I can give that out.
I think people might enjoy that.
I will give that out, sure. But give me a moment to find it, just a moment. Okay. Because it's not... just a moment. Okay.
Well, if you need to protect it, that's all right, too.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Okay, it's lab, L-A-B. It's lab sector 8, L-A-B as in boy, S as in Sam, E as in Electra, C as in cat, T as in Tom, O, R as in Rachel, the number 8, .com/Gaza Airport, GAZA AIRPORT. I'll repeat, www, HHTP, whatever, labsector8.com /Gaza Airport, full words, slash. That's it.
Thank you so much. Alana Golden, you're golden. You're very inspiring for me, and I'm sure for many of our listeners. So thank you for our visit, and I look forward to the next one.
Thank you. Thank you for your interest, and for anyone who listened, and thank you so much.
And perhaps we'll get some feedback from listeners, because these podcasts travel widely.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Blessings. Thanks. And gratitude.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Bye now.